Good morning, and welcome to In and Around the House. I am Tony Works with Bob Bard, and my, has it been one heck of a week. All of us have been so busy here around the Cincinnati area at the garden centers and nurseries, and we want to say thank you to all of those who have patronized and stopped by and picked up a lot of flowers, and there's still a lot more to be had. And Bob, I know you can attest to that. And good morning, by the way. How are you?
Good morning. What a couple weeks. And I know things will still be busy leading up to Memorial Day weekend. But Mother's Day weekend was just a whirlwind.
I'm telling you, we made it.
I felt like the place looked like a tornado went through because there was so much moved and sold. And we had to go through and reorganize.
I think we all have had to go through and reorganize, reorder, all that good stuff, and we were able to catch our breath a little bit, but we still have a few more weeks ahead of us with a lot of bedding plants yet to be purchased and planted and all that good stuff. I know that, Mother's Day weekend last weekend was a record for us, and I think some other people I've been talking with throughout the tri-state area, and that's great news.
Because the weather
was
great.
And the weather has been so cooperative this spring. You know, although we've had some off and on showers periodically, which we're going to talk about later because you and I have some concerns about, some of the dampness, what it can do to some of our plants, some of our trees, some of our shrubs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's already started. But, last weekend was Super Bowl weekend for us in the garden center world, but we still have a few more weeks or so left in all of summer. And if summer's kind to us, who doesn't want to continue the course of just getting out into the landscape?
And it's
going to
be
plan.
A great day to do it today. I mean, it's going to be a little summer-like. It's going to be a little hot today, but man, I mean, it's what a morning. I mean, I don't know if you paid attention, but the moon was absolutely incredible. It's already getting brighter out. It's 6 a.m. and it's already getting a little brighter outside. That's exciting to me.
Well, exciting or not, I got in this morning by the light of the moon. I didn't even turn on my headlights.
Really?
It was that bright.
It was bright, I'm very thankful it was bright because I was coming down the hill of Old 17, 30, 35 right there by Richardson Road, and there's a light, a four-way there with a light, and I'm coming down, and I have the big trailer behind me today because I had a delivery last night to my house, and I happened to look up, and I saw a deer run by, and I'm like, uh-oh, probably where there's one, there's more. And here comes the second one. And I was going slow because I had the big trailer. And I'm like, there might be. And I hit my brakes, and I'm glad I did because here comes the third one, and I just missed it. It would have been a bad morning, but thank goodness it was just such a beautiful morning. I could see easily, and you could see out, and really helped me a lot today.
You're right. You know, maybe perhaps if it was a little foggy like it was the other day.
Oh, I'd have drilled the deer.
A light shower, a drizzle. A lot of times you don't see those guys. I know on Old Taylor Mill Road, the deer, they'll just stand right on the side of the road and just graze.
Yeah, right there.
They're not even affected by traffic anymore.
These were cutting across, and I missed the third one by a foot or two, and it's only because I hit my brakes ahead of time. If it wasn't a full moon, it's dark through there. There's no light. No lights, no street lights. It's really dark. And you're kind of down in that valley.
Right.
Man, I was lucky.
You know, if you've ever hit a deer or been hit by one, it might jump into you right in front of you. It's startling. And I don't know, dude, those little, remember those devices you could put on the front of the automobile or like on your grill, kind of whistles or I don't know really what it does. Does that really work?
You know I don't what I'm know. Talking when a deer sees a headlight, you always heard the saying, deer in a headlight, you know, they just stop.
Kind of like you on Saturday mornings.
Yeah. Hey, I'm refreshed, man. I got 4.5 hours of sleep.
Alex like that.
See, look at you. You're the one, the old man, can't to go to bed at 7:30 at night.
I'm okay with that, you know.
You are a year older with having your birthday last week, you and Alex. So.
Oh, yeah. Happy belated birthday.
Did you celebrate?
Brother. No, to me, it's just another day.
Just another day?
Just another day. Yeah. What about you, Alex? Did you celebrate?
Yeah, actually, me and my parents and my girlfriend, we all went out to a nice dinner.
Oh, where'd you go?
Did you buy?
Acapulco out in Florence.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you buy?
My dad bought.
Oh, yeah.
I know. See? I had to twist his arm, but...
You know what? Neither one of you bought me anything for your birthday. You guys were supposed to, but you're supposed to buy me something, and neither one of you thought enough at all to bring me anything.
I must have missed that memo.
I know that I did. So anyway,
he did not bring me anything.
You know, isn't that how ironic or coincidental that Alex and I have the same birth date?
That is funny.
Yeah,
that is funny. You know, next month we'll just celebrate mine all month. Since you guys got
you know,
two, this, we'll just celebrate mine all month.
I think he has the big head over there, Alex. But anyway, thank you for the birthday message, by the way. But,
you're welcome.
You know, this week was just a great week. And, you know, what was kind of hot for you in the garden center world? What was flying out of the greenhouse?
Well, you know, we talked about thrillers, fillers, and spillers. People were coming in and asking for fillers, spillers, and thrillers. I mean, we were just hanging baskets. Flowers, mm-hmm. trees, shrubs. I mean, it's just been a great spring. I know it's been a little wet, but it's been a great spring, and it's still a great time to plant. So you can get out and do so much in the yard, and I think people are realizing this is a great time to plant.
You know what I think would be a really good topic to talk about, especially at this time, because a lot of times, you know, customers will come into the garden center, and although you might be low on something, that does not necessarily mean that you're going to not have any next week or in a couple of days or
sure.
down the road. And, you know, and that's not just for those who just buy product in and retail product. It also goes for those of you like yourself and Todd at Baton's and various other nurseries, Ron at Robbins, those who grow
mm-hmm.
and also retail. Keep in mind that there are other secondary crops being, you know, that were started not long ago, coming in later.
Right. We just started perennials this
right.
week. We started a whole load of new perennials that'll be ready in 6 to 7 weeks. So, I mean, that's exactly right. We're trying to look ahead. But with the volume of people coming in, obviously, because this is a busy month for us, you know, occasionally we will run out of something. But like you, you're putting in orders. Like everybody, we're putting in extra orders. So, you know, you may not have it that moment. And I never like to tell a customer we don't have it. But sometimes it does happen, you know. So just if you don't see what you want, go ask. So they can come to you and say, hey, Tony, I'm looking for this. And you'll say, hey, I'm sorry, I just sold out of them, but mm-hmm. I've got an order coming in on Thursday. I'll get it and put it on that.
You know, one of the big, huge benefits with us in the tri-state area, when I say with us, I'm talking about us, those of us who have local garden centers, you know, independently owned garden centers and nurseries. If one of us are out, we're willing to tell customers, hey, you might want to try over here. Or even sometimes you and I and, you know, some of the other friends that we have in the industry, we might say, hey, do you have one of these? Or do you have this particular product? Can I pick it up from you?
Oh,
so
yeah.
We have that networking capability. And I think that gives us a huge advantage. And like you just said, you know, for the customer, when you go into a garden center and you might not readily find something you're really on the hunt for or you need right away, certainly get with somebody in the garden center and say, hey, you know, can you procure this for us? Can you get this in at some point in time? And we will do everything that we can to get that or find that product for you.
Well, and sometimes, like, unfortunately, I had a friend, Mike, he called me on the phone. We were talking about he's redoing the front of his landscaping. And they called me and we talked on the phone and gave him some ideas. He wanted a hydrangea tree. Well, the week on Thursday before Mother's Day, I'd brought in 5 extra. So I think I had 7 of them there. And he came in on Monday or Tuesday, and I was out. And I didn't know. I mean, stuff had gone that fast. And I felt terrible because he came mm-hmm. specifically to get one of those, and I didn't have it. And I felt bad. That does happen. But I thought, you know, those are one we don't always sell that many in a weekend. But they were perfect, you know, and they look gorgeous. And the price was right. And I guess they all left. And, you know, I just couldn't get out and see everything in the garden center. And so, you know, I felt bad. But it does happen occasionally.
It was funny, you know, yesterday I was watering and, you know, it just warmed up all of a sudden, although we had a little bit of rain the other day. I was just looking around and perennial sales for us has been really strong thus far this season. In comparison to last year, not as strong, but again, it's all about weather.
Yeah, and temperatures, because remember April 30th last year was cold.
Right, but what was funny, you know, through all the chaos last week, as I was looking around, I was watering, I was finding various other perennials that were just picked up and left off at other areas where other perennials are located.
Right.
And, you know, I was just chuckling because sometimes you think you're out of something and things got a little jostled around. So,
well, remember a few weeks ago, I brought you some wine and rose YGLL. And all of a sudden, you didn't think you had any. Because the customer told you you were out. Well, they were just over on the other side.
They were there.
And they were beautiful.
And, you know, and I'm embarrassed to say sometimes, you know, things happen in such a fast pace. You're trying your best to keep up with everything. You're like, I think I have that out there. No, I didn't see it. Okay. Well, so you kind of take the word of somebody, and I asked you, can you drop me one off to, you know, hold me over? That person needed one. And I went out there to look at them. I'm thinking to myself, you know what? I know I have plenty of those. And I went out there, and there they were.
Yeah. That happens occasionally. So, you know, but I mean, what a great time of year to get out and plant. Today is just, I mean, it's going to be a little hot, but if you get out early, it's going to be gorgeous. It's not supposed to really warm up till after lunch.
You know, a high of 87 today, going to be a low around 66 tonight. Mostly sunny, it looks like to me in the forecast. Maybe a little bit of cloud cover working its way in later in the afternoon.
Yep.
But certainly 87, I don't want to hear you complain, because we just came out of some nasty cold weather just a couple of weeks ago, actually a month ago or 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Let's enjoy it. Let's embrace it. And we're going to talk more gardening when we come back. 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. Join in. Tell us what's been going on in your landscape. We'll be right back. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. And we are just coming off of a major, major week, like most other garden centers and nurseries. And I hope that you guys were very, very busy like we were. And we're catching our breath. We're restocking, and we're looking to bring in more and more plants, because more and more people are going to plant more and more stuff. Right, Bob?
Absolutely. I think you could have said more a few more times.
More, more, more. Why
you
not?
Know, before
Why
we not? Get going on talking about a lot of gardening today, and we got a lot planned for the show, we want to remind people, get out to our Facebook page and try to guess what plant am I.
That was your idea, by the way, and it looks like people, every time I post your idea, people get it really easily.
I'm not worried about people getting it or not getting it. I'm just encouraged about showing some pretty trees that maybe you don't always think about. Now, I will say this particular one is a little difficult to find sometimes, so but really a cool tree. So get out to our Facebook page, try to guess what it is and figure it out. It's definitely something a little different that most people aren't used to seeing in landscapes. So
yeah,
it's kind of fun.
It's a very good specimen. Kind of goes under the radar, so to speak. Yeah. It's one that you don't see a lot. You don't hear people talk about often.
Yep. And then want to remind people also, we're going to have our plant of the week coming up sometime in the 7 o'clock hour. So we got a lot to talk about.
Right.
And last few weeks we've been.
It involves the name cat.
It does.
Yeah, just to give you a little idea or heads up.
It's one of my favorites for as far as how well it blooms, how hardy it is, fairly easy to take care of. So there's our clues.
It's a good plant.
It is.
You know, and going back to what I said a moment ago before we went into the break, you know, how I'm just noticing this uptick in perennials. A lot of people really... I don't know. They're gravitating towards perennials is what I'm seeing this year.
Well, I mean, and perennials offer a nice variety of color.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes certain ones, you just got to know what you're buying, because some of them get really big. Some of them, you know, everything has its size, and then some bloom better than others. But as long as you know what you're getting, once again, it's perennial. This is kind of, to me, annual season isn't over, but annual season is still in the middle of everything. You know, there's a lot to do, add a lot of color. But I kind of feel like this is the time of year after Mother's Day. We start talking a little bit more about perennials. People start purchasing. Also, because of the heat and everything, they're starting to see blooms.
Well, that along with June is always considered National Perennial Month.
Right.
So, and that's when you typically will see perennials at their best, doing what they're supposed to be doing, giving you those at beautiful bloom power,
mm-hmm.
you know, at the local garden centers and nurseries. And that's when you get kind of, I mean, come on, if you're a plant nerd like me and the rest of us, you get sucked into that. You
yeah.
know, I love plants, and I need intervention sometimes.
There are some plants
I just want to put my arms around and hug and say, come on home with me, baby doll.
Yeah, if you just can't have everything in your yard, there's not enough space.
You can't.
So,
and as a matter of fact,
there is a meeting for those who are having trouble. You know, you can go to meetings.
When and what time is that next meeting?
Yeah, you just got to get there. Plants Anonymous.
I had to tell you a funny story. There's a guy that was in a nursery yesterday with his wife. And she's kind of getting into conifers and various different things. And
Jim at Lakeview would be all excited.
Yeah, he'd be all over it. And what was funny, she introduced me to her husband. And he goes, yeah. You can always tell the guys are always so enthused.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you get to think about it like this. When we go to a hardware store or tool store, we're all in, right, as guys? Absolutely. So just because, and there's a lot of guys that like to garden too, don't get me wrong, probably more guys than you know, women, but this gentleman's comment was, yeah, you would have thought this bird flew over and just dropped all these droppings and everything became conifers. You know, he didn't say it quite that eloquent, but right. I was just laughing. I'm like, you know, it's all good.
Hey, everybody has their thing. I got a good friend of mine who, when we landscape, we typically look for mainly evergreens, you know, and that's just what he likes. You know, we did his house, I don't know, 15, 16 years ago. So it's starting to get big. He's done a great job trimming it, but it's time to start replacing things. And, you know, so we're meeting and we're going to try to change things up, but he has a lot of evergreens. Mm-hmm. But you could do some really pretty landscapes if you think about getting your different shades of greens, your different textures, you know, add some gold, add some blues. You know, there's a lot of things you can do with evergreens to really make a beautiful landscape.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, it gives you holding power, gives you color, you know, just 24/7 year long.
Yeah, absolutely. And if it's done right, you can still get all the layering effects that you want to get. Yeah, like I said, throw some different textures side by side so you still have a lot of interest in the garden, but yet it's there year round. And then not to mention some of your evergreen trees and larger shrubs. I mean, what protection the birds get from that? Because you'll see them, especially this time of year, flying. Like my blue spruce in the front, man, they are chirping every morning. They are flying in and out. It seems like there's like, it's an apartment complex in my blue spruce.
Last year, I planted an oriental spruce, Skylands.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, right now it's flushing out and that beautiful new tip growth. I mean, it just makes them just pop in the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you see that new tip growth on conifers, in my opinion, that's just like, to a lot of other people, like blooms. But to me, it's like, things are alive, things are growing, things are moving. And it's a beautiful look, in my opinion.
I agree. Usually that two-tone look, because the new growth is such a different color. You just got to love it. I mean, it seems like with all the weather and the temperatures, everything, we talked about all the spring bloomers being right in sequence. Mm-hmm. You know, everything's been right where it's supposed to be for a normal spring. And I can't remember a spring that it's been this good with the trees. Now, we also get the pollen off the charts and some of the other things. So if you have allergies, you may not be as happy. But the evergreens, like the spruces, you know, even the blue. And I know a lot of people are kind of a little upset with the needle cast disease of the blue, but they're beautiful when you got the new light blue tip and then a little bit darker blue on the inside. Or the Norway spruce are gorgeous right now, you know, and they're just flushing out. So it's just a great time for evergreens.
We have to make for a show with conifers and talking about those different things. You know, I have a couple of hemlocks in the garden center, and one of them, it's one called Gench White, and it is awesome. And it gets this white new tip growth on it, and it really pops in the shade. You know, it's one of those things, you know, because our hemlocks, they like a little bit of shade.
They do.
You know? And I just like that look. It's a different look, and it really brightens up those shady spots in the landscape.
Absolutely. And like I said, any of those evergreens, the new growth right now is just such a different color for most of them. It's just another show. It's almost like a bloom.
I think this when we do that show, we need to bring Jim down. Get Jim up early, Montag. And
Jim needs his beauty sleep, though. So I don't know.
Nah, Jim will come in at any time of the hour or any time of the day, any hour of the week, you know, any time to talk conifers. There's no doubt about it.
He loves it. He loves it. So,
but I want to get back to when we come back out of the break. I want to talk about more annuals. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff, and it's really looking good. and there's still a lot of time left. There's still a lot of product left. Don't think that things are coming to a head, because that is the furthest from the truth. 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. It's going to be an awesome day to get out to your local garden centers and nurseries and just pick up all those blooming annuals and perennials. All that stuff is going to make your landscape look beautiful, and take advantage of the day and enjoy the rest of the afternoon, and kick back tomorrow and just enjoy it all. But it's that time of year, and there's plenty of stuff still yet to be picked up around the garden centers. Don't think that we're running out. Things might be getting a little low, but certainly there's a lot of beautiful stuff left. And also, don't forget this, Bob mentioned a moment ago, a great way to stay in touch with us is through our Facebook page. When you go out there, you have to like us, and please do so. Also, feel free to send us an email at inandaroundthehouse@b105.com. And if you're out on a leisurely stroll, walk, run, jog, working in the yard, mowing, you can catch us on a podcast if you're wanting to pick up a past show of any sort. So certainly feel free to do that. Alex does a great job keeping it up to date. And Bob, it's color. I'm gonna say things repeatedly.
You are. You're more and more color. Yeah,
absolutely.
But you know what? It is all about color. You know, for weeks we've been talking about annuals, and I mean, still one of my go-to and favorites that I love and is just incredible at the garden center is the Angelonia. I still love that plant.
Great performer. I agree with you.
You know, in the right planter, it can be the filler or the thriller. It's not a spiller. But also, if you put it in the flower bed, in a large flower bed, you're not planting one or two. But if you plant, you know, 12 to 15 and you have a big area, the color is just magnificent. I mean, and
Do you have a favorite color of Angelonia by chance?
I love them all. But honestly, yes, probably dark purple.
It stands out. I like that one called Wedgwood Blue because of the bicolor. It's got a little bit of blue, a little bit of white, and a bloom.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very attractive. I like blue.
I love that rosy color one, kind of the rosy.
Kind of a, it's almost like a deep magenta.
Yeah,
I don't know the name of that particular color.
Beautiful. All of them, even a mix. But, you know, I really like that. And you know, they're just showy, but they're easy. So if you need something easy in full sun, it's a pretty good one.
You know, I'll tell you something that I have been really, really impressed with the last few years, and those are the sun patients.
Yes.
I mean, they are so vigorous. I mean, they give you size. They just, they bring it. And when they bring it, they bring it. You'll have to water them a little more often, but stay up on your watering with the sun patients. And you'll have people asking you, what are those? Where did you get those? I love it. They look awesome. And one of my favorites is Electric Orange.
It's vibrant.
It's very vibrant. And it doesn't just stop there. And you can also buy the compact versions of the Sun Patient. But the thing of it is, there's not that much difference, I think, sometimes in height. They might be just a little bit less in height, maybe 6-8 inches max. Well, really is not a lot. It just depends on where they are and how much
moisture, you know, sunlight,
absolutely.
Ground temperature.
It all comes into play. You know, I mean, they can get anywhere from 24 inches plus, easy.
Absolutely. And they're a great, great plant, you know, especially, you know, if you've had, you know, some impatience in the past, maybe in other areas, but you want it where it's a little sunnier, they could handle it. And they're pretty.
You know, a color that, you know, some people say this isn't a color, but I'm starting to really gravitate towards things that are white.
White is a shade, but it's still very pretty. It's clean.
Yes. The only downside with some things that bloom white, and I've been kind of attracted to white because it makes other things around it pop.
Mm-hmm.
So, but with white, sometimes, you know, you get to be on your deadheading game, and that is so important. When we talk about deadheading your annuals, what that entails is picking off the old spent blooms. And the more you, opposite of the color wheel would be a contrasting type of color. So do you like to contrast things?
I'm all over the board. So last night
does Elizabeth do all these containers, or do you actually get your hands dirty and get into some of these containers?
Elizabeth does it all now. I used to do all the flowers, and now she does everything. And like I said, I have a 20-foot box trailer down there, and it was 3/4 full just of planters for our backyard and front yard. I don't even know how many we actually have, but one is all monochromatic. Three of them. She did all yellows, all pinks, and all purples. And I'll have to get those pictures so you can see it. Just loaded it up. So
well. Keep that thought in mind. We're going to talk more about gardening when we come back out of the break. Probably I want to turn the corner and go into the direction of, you know, we've had a lot of moisture, quite a bit of dampness, and I'm starting to see some issues, and I think that you brought up some things that you've been seeing as well lately. And when we come out of the break, let's talk about some of the landscape problems and solutions that you might be experiencing right now. 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. And I'm glad you came back here, Bob. I was worried about you.
Were you worried about me?
I was worried about you, yeah.
Hey, you know, I've had a lot to drink already this morning. I got up, I went to the gym, I've had my water and my stuff here that I'm doing. It's, you know. Man's got to do what a man's got to do.
I got you.
And we're going to tell people, stay hydrated today. It's going to be a little bit warm out there. But what a great morning. I mean, it is, from the studio, there isn't a cloud in the sky. It's absolutely gorgeous. You know, the sun's coming up. It's not even 7 o'clock. It's beautiful out there this morning.
And I think this is the view that a lot of your TV weather guys should have when they talk about the weather.
Yeah, you and I could definitely talk about weather today, so... We could be weather people today. There's no doubt
about
it.
And we have Michelle with us, Bob, on the line. Good morning, Michelle. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
We're doing wonderful. Did you have a nice Mother's Day last weekend?
Yes, I did.
Good for you. Good for you. What can we help you with?
We have 6 fruit trees, 2 apples, 2 peach, a pear, and a cherry.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of them, we have noticed the last probably about last week and a half, 2 weeks, has started to get black spots on the leaves.
Yeah, there's a lot of really funky stuff starting to happen, and you're seeing just some of that right now. You know, I have to ask you, Michelle, do you use any type of fungicides at all?
No, we have not used anything yet.
That is really key to really being successful with fruit trees for the most part, and it's really hard to skirt around, get around to be successful. A lot of times people want to keep things as organic or as clean as possible, but that's really, really tough when we're growing fruit trees. And not just with fruit trees, you know, a lot of our ornamental trees too are very much related to some of the fruit trees. But if you ever get a chance, are you pretty savvy with going online and so forth and Googling, so to speak?
Yeah.
Do you have a pencil handy?
No, I do not.
Okay. What I'll do, I'll have Alex get your number, and I'll get in touch with you, and I can send you this publication, or I can tell you where to go and find it. But the University of Kentucky has a wonderful publication, and it's about homegrown fruit trees and other various edibles.
Okay.
And it's a wonderful publication. It's probably about 20, 30 pages, and there's so much information in there about spraying fruit trees in a timely fashion. And a lot of times when we see these various diseases, Michelle, and Bob, you can chime in anytime you like, that happens during the bloom period. And we need to spray before that bloom period to be effective in controlling some of these diseases. Although we may spray, it doesn't always necessarily mean that we'll keep the disease away totally. 9 times out of 10, it's very effective, and a lot of times not as severe. So that's the benefit of it. So a lot of times when we see the disease in our various fruit trees, it's in it. So whatever we spray might help prevent it from getting worse or progressing. Okay. But what's there, unfortunately, is what's there. And that publication, I'm just going to mention it right now for, you know, if anyone else is experiencing what you are, it is ID-21, and that's at the University of Kentucky. It's a wonderful publication. Probably the key to this publication I find most beneficial is in the very back of it. It shows you various stages of that fruit tree as it's developing. So when I say that, we spray our fruit trees at various stages, okay, before, you know, before it flowers, after it flowers, in various times throughout the season, depending upon what's plaguing those fruit trees. But I cannot tell you by calendar date when to spray that tree, because it all depends on what kind of weather we're having and how far along that tree has progressed and how it is flushed out with new growth and where it is when it blooms. So that guide in the back I find to be the most important, and that is ID-21. And if you just do that and put behind it University of Kentucky, you will find a wealth of information. And when you use those products, we're going to use things like Mancozeb. That is a fungicide that you can buy at one of your local garden centers here locally in the tri-state area. Also, there's chlorothalonil, which also goes under the trade name of Daconil. That's another really good fungicide. And we're going to talk about some of these fungicides and applications. Go ahead, Bob.
No, I agree. And unfortunately, that's the one disadvantage of the moisture that we've had this spring,
right,
is some of the diseases are rapidly getting upon people before they know it. And I think that's what's happened here. And
right,
it's happening kind of all over. And we're going to have a few issues over the next few weeks.
And Michelle, I want to add something else to this, and I don't mean to ramble on. How old are your fruit trees?
They're not old. They just planted them probably about 2 months ago, if that.
Okay.
But,
you know,
but they're 7-8 foot tall.
Okay.
I mean, they got good sized ones. They didn't get little itty bitty ones.
Okay. You know, and just deal with it as best you can. And I encourage you to get this publication. And I'm also going to have Alex get your information. But there's one more element, one more important thing I want to bring to your attention. And that is pruning your fruit trees.
Okay.
That is very, very important. And usually we do that late winter, early spring. And the objective is we're trying to open those fruit trees up to prevent moisture from lying around as long as it can by reducing some of that foliage and opening that tree up so more air movement gets throughout that tree and dries that foliage off quicker. Because the longer that water stays on there in these cooler temperatures, that's where those diseases start to ramp up from.
Okay. Yeah, because our one peach tree has probably 4 or 5 little peaches already on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're getting bigger. I mean, we've been out, we check them every day, and they're getting bigger.
Right. So
the tree, you know, the trees are thriving. They just, we're worried about that, the black spots.
Got it. But, you know, are you in Ohio? Or are you calling from northern Kentucky? Where are you calling from?
We live about 5 minutes from Bob Bard's.
Okay. You know, stop by and see Bob. Also get with your county extension office. And also try to do your best to obtain some of those pamphlets or copies of how to take care of fruit trees and when to spray. And we'll follow up with you. How's that?
That'll work, yeah, because I have a few other questions for Bob. I'm getting ready to put a flower bed in, but it's in a dead area that's underneath a huge pine tree.
Yeah.
Sure.
Michelle, can I just pause you for a moment? I apologize. We have to take another quick break, and we'll certainly take your other question if you just hang in there with us for a moment, and we'll be right back, okay?
Not a problem.
All right, thank you. 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. And when we come back, we'll continue this discussion with Michelle and anything that you might want to add to it. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. And if you're just joining us, welcome. And if you look outside, it's going to be like this for the most part of the day. It's going to warm up a little bit more. So take advantage of it. Get out and get some of that yard work done. I got so much to do. I wish I had time to do it. So I'm encouraging you, those of you that have Saturday and Sundays off, take advantage of it. Get it done. Just get her done. And we're going to go back to our previous caller. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard here at In and Around the House. And we were with Michelle just a moment ago before we went into the break. And we were talking about fruit trees. And Michelle also has another question. And Michelle, before we get with your second question, and thank you for waiting, by the way, Bob has a copy of ID-21 for you. So stop by and see him.
Okay.
Okay. And what is the other thing
also
that we
can... a good spray for her for that, if she wants to stay organic, is the copper soap fungicide from Natural Guard.
You can give her the lay of the land when she stops by and sees you.
All right. I'll do that.
Do that, because this publication, Michelle, you'll find very, very useful. And then, again, pruning is of the essence as well. And your second question, what is it for us?
I have an area. We live on 7.5 acres and have a huge barn. Mm-hmm. In front of the barn, we have a, I'd say this thing's probably about 35, maybe 40 foot tall. It's a pine tree that's been chopped on the bottom. And there's it's all open space. And we have tilled it out and prepared the ground. I want to make a flower bed in there.
Okay.
And I'm kind of, I'm don't know what kind of plants to plant underneath because of the sap from the pine tree.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. So you've limbed it up is what you're explaining to us. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. How far up did you limb it?
It's limbed all the way up to the top of the barn.
So it's pretty 15, 20 feet?
Yeah, so you're going to get plenty of light.
Yeah, about that.
Got it. You know, here would this would be my first concern, and Bob, go for it. You know, that pine tree is old and established, and it's been there for some time. And as those needles have dropped over the years, you know, as it's kind of shed, so to speak, you've probably noticed that very few things, if anything, grows underneath that tree. You know, it's probably pretty clean as far as weeds are concerned, I would seem to think.
Yeah, and when we tilled it up, it was grassy. I mean, it was.
Oh, it was grassy.
To be mowed. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Grassy.
Well, then I think
because
that you.
It gets sun most of the day.
Got it. Yeah, you know. Experiment with some things. Pick some of those annuals up at Bob's or some perennials.
Do you want more shrubs and something a little bit bigger, or do you want just a flower bed where you plant annuals every year?
We were just thinking annuals every year because of perennials, we thought, well, with the pine tree and the sap, maybe they wouldn't do as good.
Yeah, and if you're out there where you had grass, I think we can get away with a lot of different things. I just think because of the size, you can plant some of the larger annuals, maybe like a salvia that gets pretty large. You could plant the angelonia we talked about. There's a lot of things that you can do. And don't forget, even some perennials underneath there might be kind of nice if it's a large area. Then you don't have to replant everything every year.
Okay, because I took pictures of it, and I've been meaning to stop in and see Bob, but I had a total knee replacement done 8 weeks ago and just went back to work this week.
Oh, geez. It sounds like you're better.
I haven't had time to do anything.
We got a great selection of perennials. We still got a great selection of annuals, you know, and I'll be even up there tomorrow. So if it happens to be more convenient to stop up on a Sunday, stop up and see me, and I'd love to help you, and I'll get you a copy of this ID 21.
Okay,
all right, Michelle, you have a wonderful weekend.
Yeah, because I get off work at noon, so I could swing in on my way home.
That'd be great.
All right, you have a great weekend. Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Have a good
bye.
One.
And we have Jerry with us this morning on the line. Good morning, Jerry. How are you?
Hey, how's it going, Tony?
It's going. How about yourself?
I got a question.
Yeah.
We put a large garden this year. It's probably about 60 by 100 and something feet long.
I'm jealous.
That's big.
Yeah, it's a nice size garden.
It has 60 tomato plants in it. But anyways, we got some huge pine trees about 30, 40 yards from it.
Mm-hmm.
Once it's established, as far as all the plants coming up and the corn and everything, can we put them pine needles in there?
You know, you could. I don't know if I necessarily would do that. I mean, what do you want to use the pine needles for? What's your objective?
Just basically to be lazy and keep the weeds out.
You know, if you have sizable rows, I mean, when I say that, where you can get in between rows rather easily, it wouldn't be bad to make a pathway in between the rows with that, you know.
Yeah, because I can feel down between the rows.
Just if you can get down through the rows and you want to use that as a pathway, certainly do it. That will help keep some of those weeds down, you know, to a degree. Not all, but, you know, it would certainly be helpful.
Right.
You know, I would just keep it in the rows where you're walking. And, you know, if you're getting down through there to do any type of weeding and so forth, I wouldn't be hesitant to do that. I wouldn't do much of the, mulching with those pine needles up close to the plants.
Right.
You could, but it takes a long time for that, pH level to change as a result of, but,
right.
I think you're just adding some work there for yourself.
That's what I don't want.
Well, no. But, you know, you got to keep those beds. You got to keep that a garden that size. You're on your toes, and I'm sure you're out there daily weeding. And that's so important,
right?
Because weeds are competitors You know, especially when we're growing tomato plants, pepper plants, and all that other good stuff. You know, when you got an abundance of weeds, they compete and they rob nitrogen away from our plants that we want to keep around and we want to be productive.
Now, what about as far as that, like, that netting they put down, like you put in flower beds, like, you know, when you put your flower beds down for weeds?
Like the fabric?
Yeah, would that work?
Yeah, you could certainly use that. You know, are you going to use that again for the rows, or are you going to use that where you
just between the plants?
Yeah, that's fine too. Yeah, you can certainly do that. Pin it down and then put some mulch over top of it, or however you want to handle it.
And I would probably use a thinner fabric because you're going to you're going to pull a lot of that up, and it's going to be exposed to sunlight, so it's going to break down a little bit faster. But that way the soil can get through it a little bit easier when it does rain. So, you know, a 3 to 6 year might work really well for you compared to like a 20 year, which is really thick and dense. So something a little lighter weight, I think I would recommend if I'm going to throw it in the garden.
Yeah, I didn't know if they made any kind of like granular you could sprinkle out to keep the weeds down. Like, you know, sort of like a cream, but I'm not a big cream.
Well,
fan,
you could use corn gluten. But you have to use it a little bit more often, but corn gluten is an effective organic pre-emergent.
Is that a granular? Or?
Yeah, it's kind of a grainy kind of product. Yes.
Okay.
You know, Preem sells small containers of corn gluten, but for your situation, I would probably go to a feed farm and see if you can find larger bags to make it more I guess cost friendlier.
Yeah, because you got about that size.
Yeah.
You got some space, so I would agree with Tony.
You'll be
on that.
Corn gluten and gluten and gluten. There I go. I've used the word like 2 or 3 times.
Yeah, there you go again.
A lot of gluten.
Yep.
But that's a good way to do it, Jerry.
I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, brother. Have a good weekend. Right. Thank you.
You know, you mentioned the pine needles. You have to use an enormous amount, and studies have shown actually it still doesn't really affect the acidity very much. You would think it does. I mean, I would think it does, but truth be told, it doesn't change it very much, and you'd have to use a huge amount of pine needles to make a difference.
No,
huge.
But I think they would be very suitable for like your pathways, you
like
know,
in between
in the rows. Yes,
keep the weeds down for sure.
Absolutely,
absolutely.
All right, we're going to take another quick break, and we're going to continue our conversation about some of the dampness, some of our concerns, some things we want to point out to you as a homeowner that you want to keep your eye out on, and what you can do and what you need to pick up at your local garden centers and nurseries to combat some of these fungal issues when we come back. 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Wirtz with Bob Bard. We'll talk to you in just a moment. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Wirtz with Bob Bard, and if you're just joining us, welcome, and it's going to be a beautiful day. Just take advantage of it. I'm working Saturday and Sundays. I have a lot of stuff sitting around my house that needs to be planted from last year's project that's still unfinished, which is...
Didn't you haul some more stuff home the other day?
I took home... Let's see, what did I take home the other day? A Harry Lauder walking stick.
Yeah.
Great shrub.
What else did we throw in that van? There was like 10 of them.
Oh, those were Grow Low Sumacs.
There you go.
Yeah, I have those. I have some Tiger Eyes. So I got a little scheme up my sleeve to do some various things. And what I'm saying to you is for those who are off on the weekends, I used to be, and I'm jealous that you are, take advantage of it. It's just...
Do as I say, not as I do, right?
Right, right. I don't know if that's always a good thing to follow.
It isn't. I was just really happy last night. I got a lot of my annual baskets back around the pool. And, you know, I'm going to open the pool tonight as long as I'm alive after getting up early. But, you know, it's almost summertime, man. It's late spring. It's going to be great. It's going to be, I like it hotter. You know, I don't like the cold.
Next week's when we open the pools up, right?
Only Memorial Day weekend officially. Yes. Gets everything going. So
there you have it. So you better get your pool. You know, you still got that dark green algae in your pool?
I haven't opened it yet, so I don't know. Probably. Probably.
Bob leaves his green. He's okay with that.
Mine's lake color. No, I'm just kidding. It's not.
Looks like a lake.
But
looks
we
like
were talking a... about problems, and, yes. You know, there are some things.
Have you seen any problems? Has anyone brought anything into the nursery?
I'm starting to see a little bit of leaf spot on some crab apples. Just a few, not a lot. I'll tell you what I've seen all of a sudden. It seems like we're getting some dollar spot or something in the lawn. There's a few things out there. The roses have some diseases.
I have some roses in the nursery that I'm going to have to give a haircut. And they have powdery mildew. And that's a tough one to skirt.
It is. And it's just because a lot of this problem is because of heat, humidity, and moisture. And even though we've had some cool days with all those moisture, and then we had two or three really cloudy days with moisture, and then all of a sudden the heat kind of explodes, I find that some of those diseases just kind of, they're happy, happy, happy. See, I just did happy three times.
There you go. See, what I do is contagious, Bob.
That's true.
I just want you to know that. What are you laughing about over there, Alex? You thought that was good.
But don't you find, what about you? Have you seen anything out there?
I have. You know, I was telling you about some of my own rose bushes that we grow at the garden center. Some of those, you know, just some varieties get powdery and mildew a lot easier than others. One in particular, that Francis Myland,
mm-hmm.
It is next to something that has powdery mildew, and it doesn't have a lick of it on there.
And it's right next to it.
It's right next to it. So that's why you want to look for really good rose bushes that can resist some of those various types of diseases. And also applying fungicides really help us along with those diseases as well. But, you know, that's when you get a good representation of how things perform. But I'm seeing some powdery mildew on various things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing some chlorosis, some chlorotic stuff going on with rose bushes as well. And we'll talk about that. Also, the other day, I noticed on some hawthorns, I'm starting to see some of the cedar rust. And that's one of those diseases that kind of has to coincide with another plant species close by in proximity. Some say within just a couple of miles, and that is the juniper.
Right.
In order to get cedar rust issues, you know, and it doesn't just happen with the hawthorns. It can happen with apple trees, crab apple trees, you know, sometimes some of the pears, even some of the service berries, but you'll
quinces.
See these quinces, you'll mm-hmm. see these little rust pustules. So that's what I'm starting to see in the landscapes.
Yeah. And unfortunately you're seeing, you know, on the juniper, it's kind of a gooey orangey substance that it's pretty noticeable. And then you'll see almost like a little tentacle coming out of it.
It's like jelly. It looks like jelly. You put it on like toast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of looks like that. You know,
no, don't put it on your toast. I'm just kidding. Bob does.
But it does take a little while for it to develop. And most of it started probably, you know, 18 months ago, you know, kind of. It's not something that just happens this spring and then all of a sudden there's damage. This has been on there for a little while. And
it's
then
a when cycle.
They, it's a yeah. cycle. Thank you. And it's.
So what do you do about it?
Well,
tell me, take me to the remedy part. We've identified some problems, Bobby. Take me to the remedy.
Well, if you're going to use a chemical control, you're going to use a fungicide. You're definitely going to use a fungicide to control anything, and it has to say it on the label, rust disease.
Got it.
It has to.
So what would you use?
Chloranalethyl.
Chlorothalonil.
Thank you. You could use a sulfur product. There's a few different types, but it's going to be a continual spray every 10 to 14 days.
Mancozeb,
you're going to have to stay in it.
Mancozeb,
yep.
You know, copper fungicide. These are a lot of good fungicides. And the way you use these products to be most effective, you have to be proactive. You know, by the time you wait and it's reactive after it's happened, after it's been transpiring and you're seeing these issues, it doesn't make what's there, what's present, better. It might help with the progression of it. However, what's there is there. You know, you need to do these things early, early in the season. And that's going back to that ID-21
prevention.
Publication, prevention. And, you know, these products are very helpful. They work. And that's why it's so important to get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. We can tell you when to use these products, what they're doing for you, and provide an array of various things that will help you combat these diseases and issues. But that's not just always the solution. What about positioning things in the landscape to where they get ample airflow movement around them?
Well, I think that's the most important. And I started with chemicals for that reason, because that's okay, that's what I have to go to. But a cultural control would be better. And that's planting a good plant, having a healthy plant, fertilizing to make sure the plant is growing properly, adequate moisture, planting it in the correct spot so it does get airflow, or not expecting a tree that's meant for more of a sunny area to perform real well in shade. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's all of those cultural things. And then, you know, I still like when the leaves fall, if you can get them up and remove and just dispose of quickly, if you have a rust control, you know, rust disease or disease on roses, I like to remove those leaves if I can't rake them up and get rid of it.
In my opinion, that's the most important thing that you can do, because if you let that stuff lie around, even throughout the fall and winter months, what it does, you're likely to see this disease the following season because it harbors itself right underneath your species, whatever that shrub is, or whatever, if it's a rose bush or whatever it is, it harbors itself, it winters over. The next season, like we're in this rainy season, we've been in this wet period. Think about it. When it rains hard, just like it did yesterday.
Yep.
And then we heat up today. It's still moist out there this morning from yesterday's late rain. And when we heat up like into the 80s, that's when all these weird things started occurring. But when that rain pelts the soil surface, it gets those spores up and moving. It's windy.
Yep.
And everybody
moves everything.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, we set ourselves up for infection.
Now, I have a question for you.
Wait now, a minute. Next segment. You can't ask me a question.
I have to have this question. So
go ahead.
And you can think about it over the break if you want.
Go ahead. All right. You're going to throw me under the bus?
I am.
Okay.
You know, so, you know, let's say you have an issue. It's already there. And you want to do a spray. Do you think it will be effective after you already have the disease? Is there any purpose of continuing the spray? So I want you to think about that for just a second. We're going to take a quick break.
I can't answer it now.
No, you got to take it. We're going to take a quick break, and then you get a chance to answer it. You're listening to In and Around the House with Tony Works and Bob Bard. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard, and a great way to stay in touch with us is via our Facebook page, if you would. And keep in mind, if you go out there, do your best to check out past postings, and you have to like us. That's the objective. You got to like us. Well, we hope you like us. And also feel free to send us an email if you choose to go that route. And you can do that at inandaroundthehouse@b105.com. And if you want to catch a past show when you're just out there on your leisure taking a jog or maybe mowing the lawn or what have you, catch a past show on the podcast. Alex does a great job keeping up with that. And we're going to continue our conversation. We're going to pick up where we left off before we went into the break with various diseases. And Bob threw a question my way, and he wouldn't tell me the answer when we were in the break. I said, you got to tell me the answer. But
so let me repeat my question.
Repeat your question. Yeah.
So somebody comes in and they have a disease on their roses or their hawthorn, and it's already there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's still worth spraying a fungicide to prevent further damage, or do you just let it go?
I really have to assess it, okay? And when I say that, how bad is it? If it's maybe in the early stages, I will certainly perhaps spray to help prevent further infection from progressing. And the reason why I say that is I want you to imagine or visualize this occurring. Like yesterday's rain. So let's just say you have a shrub in a landscape. Let's just say it's a rose bush with powdery mildew or a black spot or rust. When the water hits the foliage as a result of it raining, and as that water runs over the infected foliage and it drips down onto lower areas of the shrub and affects that foliage, that's how it spreads.
Mm-hmm.
So keeping that in mind, if the infection isn't too bad, what I'll do, I'll spray to kind of keep that disease from progressing if I can possibly do that. Now, if it's a rose bush, I'm just going to give you this as an example. I'm not going to be hesitant any way whatsoever to cut that rose bush back just like I would in the late winter, early spring. And at that point, I might spray it and I will fertilize it and I will allow it to come back on and flush back out. And you'll be surprised how well that rose bush will respond.
And recover.
Recover.
So, I agree with you 100%. And that would be my answer as well.
Well, I'm glad. Now, I have something very interesting to say while we're on this topic of diseases. And I fielded a phone call the other day. Somebody had called into the garden center. And I, you know, I don't want this to come across as being negative or sarcastic in any way, shape, or form. But I took time out of my afternoon while we were busy to return a phone call to a customer that was having an issue with rose bushes. And part of those issues with what is exactly what we're talking about, and a lot of chlorosis, you know, yellowing of the foliage and so forth. And that occurs when, you know, we receive ample amounts of rainfall, the ground stays wet and saturated for a period of time, and you're more than likely to see these things occur. So as I was talking to this person on a telephone, she's throwing out things to me without letting me talk. But, you know, can I use 777 and all this stuff? And I'm like, well, I guess you could. You know, I'm not that familiar with a product called 777. If you can find it, I guess you could use it.
And she was talking a fertilizer, not like
right.
the product
well, like, 7. Like 10, 10, 10 or gotcha. 12, 12, 12.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm like, you know, where are you getting this information? My neighbor down the street. Okay. So we have a lot of these armchair quarterbacks, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So she goes, you know, I can just get that at Walmart. And I said, well, I guess you can. And I said, but I said, what I would do, I said, I might use something, a product like that contains iron in it to help green up those yellowing leaves and get that nutrient back into that shrub. And I would also fertilize it. And I told her a couple of products and her response was, can I get it at Walmart? And I was appalled. You know, I took the time out of my afternoon to call her back. And I asked her this question. I said, did you call Walmart and ask them how to take care of your rose bush? And did they tell you what was going on with it? I said, I'm really upset that I'm helping you. And you want to ask me if you can get these products at Walmart. You know, that's just not right. And I wasn't being sarcastic. But what I want to say is, you know, refrain from saying that. I don't care where you get it. But, you know, I'm here to help you. And I'm in business, and you're asking for expertise, and not just with me, with any other garden center here in a tri-state area. And again, I don't want to sound like I'm beating a dead horse or being negative. You know, that's just not right. You know, if you bought a plant at Walmart, I want you to call Walmart first. If you bought it at Kroger, I want you to call Kroger first. Then come see me. You know, but that's just not right when you do that. And I'm going to leave it as that.
There you go.
And I apologize. But you patronize the garden centers because that's where you're going to get your best advice and expertise. And that's it.
All right. You feel better?
Yeah.
All right.
Can we take another break?
We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue our talk on diseases.
All right.
So stick with us for the best 3 hours in radio. I am Bob Bard, and we are in and around the house with Tony and Bob. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to In and Around the House. I am Tony Works here alongside with my friend Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery. And if you're just joining us, welcome. And it's going to be a beautiful day to get out and do something in and around the landscape, the yard. No matter what it is that's outside that's going on today, it's going to be the perfect day to do it. Put some sunscreen on because it's going to heat up a little bit. We're going to have some sunshine, drink plenty of liquids, and enjoy the day and take it on head
first.
You
feel better?
You know,
after that rant.
Oh, I'm really kidding. I've been here for 9 years, and I really have never hit the sound off button.
Yeah,
but that one really got under my skin.
It definitely got under your skin.
I think we
could tell.
I'm okay. And I'm just going to leave it as that. And thank you for inquiring, by the way.
Yeah, I just want to make sure you're okay. You know,
all right. I just took
got
a couple
year older and look at you.
Anyway, Bob,
I'm just kidding.
Where are we headed?
We're talking about maybe some other diseases, and sometimes, you know, or problems, not just diseases, but, you know, other things that I've seen out there. I've seen some leaf miner on boxwoods, and we've touched on this before, but I wanted to bring it back up again because it's I've seen some issues. Mm-hmm. So we want people to start talking about the Fertilum tree and shrub drench. It's not too late to apply. And if you're having some issues, it's a great way to prevent any further damage. You know, also trimming a lot of those shrubs right now can help, which I know we're going to talk more about later on the 8 o'clock hour, some stuff to get your beds ready. But, you know, sometimes with your diseases, good trimming and cultural practices are good, but just make sure you sterilize your pruners on a lot of things.
Absolutely. And, you know, going back to the pruning side of things, you know, open things up. When you're pruning, open things up so you get a lot of air movement around and throughout your shrubs, you know, your trees and various things. And, you know, depending upon what you're pruning, you know, there's various times to do certain things. But I've never seen anybody lose a shrub or a tree because they pruned at the inopportune time. So don't fret that. I'd rather see you do some pruning and proper pruning versus no pruning at all. But getting that air movement around our plants is of the essence. And that's really what keeps a lot of those diseases in check.
Absolutely.
You know, for example, what comes to mind, one of my favorite shrubs in the landscape is ninebark. And there are some varieties of ninebark that, man, you know, it's like, gosh, did you just throw talcum powder on yourself?
Yeah, because it gets such a powdery mildew.
Yes, are you all right, pal?
But you know what? An easy way to get rid of it, because I have some by my electric box, and they get powdery mildew every year. I just trim it out. You can trim out a big, big section, and it grow back.
And real quick, we have Benny on the line with us this morning. Good morning, Benny. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing today?
We're doing okay. What's going on?
Hey, I got some hosta trouble every year. And what it is, my hostas are beautiful right now. They're bloomed. They're, you know, they're growing good and everything.
Mm-hmm.
When it starts getting warm, the leaves start, like the bugs are eating it. Now, I've looked for slugs on the back of it. I put the liquid drench in there. I put that seven dust on it. I've done everything, but it still does it.
You know, if you go, and a lot of times I'm starting to see this issue right now, and you just brought up a good thing. For those who have hostas, and you start seeing those holes in the hostas where it looks like somebody like Jed Clampett went out the back and took a shotgun to it, and you got all those holes
like
in it, right?
Like the slugs are eating
it. You know what? Benny, that happens at night when you're kind of inside relaxing, go to sleep. Those guys come out after dusk. If you go out there at the flashlight, after just a little while after dusk, you know, the sun goes down, you'll see these real little gray, like tiny slugs, snails, and they go up the stalk. They're all in a hurry to get up underneath the leaf where the party is, and they just help themselves. Now, regardless, the way to treat this and go after it is a number of different ways. There are some products out there that you can purchase that you can sprinkle underneath the hostas. And some of it, you know, it's like a snail and slug bait. That will be very, very effective. And the best way to apply it is have your spouse or a friend take a broomstick handle, get underneath those large leaves of the hosta from the bottom up, and just gently pull up, or you can spread that rather quickly and easily. Does that make sense?
In other words, you're going to fold it up and then put it on there.
Exactly. So just have somebody use a broom handle and just do that, and that allows you to get underneath there, you know, a lot more efficiently and effectively with those products, and they work. Trust me, they work well. You can also use an organic approach with diatomaceous earth. That's effective. A lot of people will put little caps of beer out there to attract the slugs. They like the yeast in the beer. They'll go into it and drown. But you can certainly, yes. So that's usually a little test thing that I'll do when I see that happening, that I know that it's the slug. And you'll see what they look like. But, Bob, chime in anytime. And there's also, do you have pets?
Yes, I do.
Do they get into those hosta beds?
No.
Okay, that's good, because there is a pet-friendly product out there, too, that you might want to consider. But if your pets aren't in the hosta beds, don't worry about it. You'll pay a little more for the pet-friendly stuff, but if you have pets that hang out in there, go that route.
Yeah, and you can use diatomaceous earth, too.
I got a dog, and he never gets in.
Yeah. But you know what? That is once you start seeing those holes, they don't heal themselves, so get out to your local garden centers today and pick up that slug product. Where are you located, by the way?
Western Hills.
Yeah, over on the west side of town. Go Doug Lohman's place. He's over in Harrison. Mm-hmm. You can go over to Schwab Nursery.
Yeah, I know that is.
Yeah, Robbins over there in Delhi, White Oak. So anywhere over in the west side. Go see, I don't know, how far are you from Lohman's? You familiar with?
Where's Lohman?
He's over in Harrison. Is that? Are you a little closer to us?
Yeah, he's probably a little closer to Schwab.
Yeah, you're probably a little closer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm down the street from Schwab.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, just go see them.
Yeah, go there and say hello to Mitzi for us.
Okay, I will. One more question.
Okay.
Ants might have anything to do with that, too?
No.
No? Okay. Because I see ants crawling up and down the leaves on it, and I spray them off, and I didn't know if they were might be eating on it, too.
No, but I think when you put that product down, I would have to say, more than likely, it will probably control some of that ant population around the base as well.
Okay. Will that be good for knockout roses, too?
No, it's primarily for snails and slugs. But you're
eating on the knockout.
Well, on your knockout roses, you're going to want to pick up the systemic tree and shrub drench that contains imidacloprid from Fertilume. You can get that over there at Schwab's as well.
The liquid drench is what you're talking
yes,
about.
Yes, that's the.
I've got that.
That's a really good product to use.
Now, do you just put it down one time, or do you keep applying it?
Once a year, it will protect your shrubs for up to a year. Now, you'll have to use 3 ounces of that product to 1 gallon of water per foot height of shrub.
Per foot height.
Yeah. Okay. So you're going to...
If it's going to be 3 feet, you're going to add 9 ounces.
Nine ounces.
So 1 foot, and you got 3 foot tall, 3 ounces per foot, that would be 9 ounces per gallon, and pour it on there.
Okay. Now, is that per bush, or is that could I do the whole all the bushes?
Per plant.
It is a lot. And a lot of times that's why I've had people say, well, that product doesn't work. It's because they're not using the proper amount. And that's usually what it causes.
And you know what? You'll have beautiful roses. You won't see that that window painting or the skeletonized leaves on the rose bush.
Now, is that on full growth or is that now?
Base it on the full growth that it's going to be. So, because now they're probably a little bit shorter. So, it's going to be 3 feet tall probably by summer. So, base it on what it's going to be.
So, just average a 3 foot tall, 9 ounces.
Yeah.
Yes.
That would do it.
Okay.
All right.
I appreciate it.
Have a good weekend, Benny. Thank you. 749-B105 in and around the house. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. And we're going to talk more gardening. So, if you're like Benny or anybody else that's having some issues, we're here to field those questions and help you with those problems. We'll be right back. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. A little bit of Michael Jackson there. You guys are Jackson 5. You guys are making it happen right there.
Yeah. Everybody wants to see me dance. They wish I had a camera in the studio.
You need dance lessons.
I do.
I didn't want to tell you that, but what are you laughing about? You do too.
But we want to welcome everybody back to In and Around the House with Tony Works and Bob Bard. And, man, we've already been talking about a ton of stuff, but you said we have another phone call?
We have a couple callers holding on the line here. We have Tom with us this morning. Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I have a question first. I have a plant bed that I take care of. It's the... Where it comes out about 10 feet from the house. It's shaded. We're having a hard time figuring out a flowering plant, to put in that spot. We've tried a couple different plants that's good for shading, but nothing's working. It seems like nothing's really growing and does well in this spot. And it's kind of close to the house. So it seems like it's whatever we put in there, either the heat's getting to it or it just doesn't like being there.
Couple questions, Tom.
Okay.
When you say shade, can you give me an idea how much sunlight it's getting? I'm just curious.
Very little. It might get an hour a day.
Okay.
It's got a tree on one side, and it's got a house on the other.
Okay. And at this point in time, thus far, can you give us an idea what you have tried to experiment with and work with that has not worked?
Trying to think of the name of the couple different plants that we've tried.
That's all right. That's all right. Yep. I just didn't know if anything would come to mind right away. You know, we have those kind of moments here all the time.
It's all right. I'm up in age too. My memory's starting to go.
So. You know, are you thinking along the lines of, let me ask you this, perennials? Okay. Are you looking for some color with annuals? Give me
perennials.
An idea. Perennials. Okay.
I'd like to have one that's about 3 feet tall or in diameter to put there.
Mm-hmm.
We've tried in other places around the house as different plants have worked, but in this specific spot, it's like a mound.
Uh-huh.
And whatever we try there, it does not work.
Is your soil decent? Have you amended it with like anything like compost, maybe peat moss? Mm-hmm. What have you done thus far as making that soil or amending that soil with anything?
Not really anything, okay. Because I keep it mulched real well and I keep the weeds out of it. And I hadn't really thought about because the plants, other plants do well around it and, you know, in that same bed, but in that spot, for some reason, nothing's working.
Do you have a lot of deer or any sort of wildlife around we have to take into consideration as well?
No.
Okay. Here's where I would start. And Bob will just kind of step this one through step by step. First and foremost, what I would do is I would rake the mulch back and put it off to the side, and I would rent a rototiller if you don't already have one, and I would start layering that surface of this bed with peat moss, pine fines, compost, you know, you name it, and start turning it in. And you need to get down into that, too, well enough to where, you know, at least I'd say 10, 12 inches. Get down into it, okay? There used to be an old method of developing perennial beds, and that was a double dig routine or process with a spade, and you don't want to do that. That's backbreaking. So let's rent a rototiller, borrow one, and let's get some good stuff into that soil. I would rototill it first and then start adding the product to it and turn it into it. It's going to be a lot easier.
Okay.
And Bob, let's talk about plants.
Well, he said he wants to do some perennials, so we can go, and it's 3x3, so things that are tough and durable, Lenten rose, you could always go with that, because an hour of sunlight will be good, will be fine with that.
Tom, you have a pencil here as we talk about this?
No, go ahead, keep talking, because I've done landscaping for years, and I have an idea what you guys are talking about.
There you go, and you can always check the podcast, too.
Also, you know, I would think one of my favorite go-tos in the shade is Solomon's seal.
Yep, you can do that. Even some of the hostas, if he really wants a big hosta, just get some of the big varieties that are really neat, like Sun and Substance or Blue Angel.
Right. Abiqua, drinking gourd. That's really interesting, too. The leaves are cupped.
Well, and around that, kind of closer to, more towards the house, about 3 or 4 feet from the house, we've put some hostas around that area, but I was trying to do something that would keep the mound well, and also keep the structure of it,
you know.
And a hosta doesn't really, because it only goes in the ground a couple inches.
Yeah,
so I was trying to think of something that the roots could go down into it and really hold that mound as well.
How high is the mound?
Yeah, is this thing like Mount Everest? I mean, come on.
No. It's probably about 2.5-3 feet tall.
Yeah. Also pretty big.
But I don't think, you know, that shouldn't erode. You have mulch on there. Just get some things in there, plant it. You know, a nice little dainty ground cover is sweet woodruff. Yeah. That will give you a little bit of a ground cover presence.
You know, the other one I like is Pachysandra, if he's worried about erosion.
Pachysandra, yeah, there you go.
Pachysandra really works well in an area like that. It's not as tall, but it's going to spread, and then it does have that white flower to it, which is really nice. And they make a glossy leaf one as well, which I really like a lot better, because it gives you that shine, so it really stands out
in
a dark spot.
What about Brunnera, however you want to pronounce it, Jack Frost? That's a great perennial with... you know, and a very attractive leaf to it. The foliage gets a blue bloom. There's a number of things that you can use in there. Epimedium, you know, comes to mind. Pulmonaria, lungwort.
Yeah, there's actually quite a bit to choose from. I think preparing your soil
is the key.
You know, I like to add a little bit of pine fines if you're really struggling. I think that would help you a lot. And, you know, send us a picture on Facebook, especially once you get it done. We'd love to see what you did and how it's working for you.
Of that, no problem.
All right.
Then I do have one suggestion.
Yes.
When you were talking, the guy called in a little while ago and said something about the garden. I have a garden that I'm looking at right now. It's about 40x50.
Okay.
And what we did was to keep the weeds down in areas, especially where it's tight and around our tomatoes, we put a couple of inches thick of grass clippings around it. It keeps the heat in and it keeps the moisture in. And it does extremely well.
That's a great idea. Yep. Wonderful tip. Wasn't thinking along those lines. And that is what this show is all about there, Tom. Those kind of tips from input, you know, input from you guys out there in the gardening world. So thanks for sharing.
Okay. Sure.
All right. Guys. Have a great weekend. And we have Sandy with us. Good morning, Sandy. How are you? Do we still have Sandy? No,
we lost Sandy.
Sandy, give us a shout back. And if we can be of some help, we'll do our best to field that question. And, you know, that was a, you know, that was a very interesting conversation right there.
Well, and that's what always makes, you know, I always enjoy when customers come into the store, and I know, you know, all of us who own a garden center, we love, because sometimes there's little challenges that, you know, come upon us, and sometimes they're real easy. Sometimes they're a little bit more difficult, like Tom's there. But, you know, I was thinking before he said perennials, you know, if he wanted a shrub, you know, and it could get a little bigger, you know, sometimes the different viburnums will actually do quite well in those areas. And depending on how much, whether it was
so
an hour.
What viburnum would you use?
Well, if it could get bigger, like a Juddi, a Carlisi.
So, however, I think in that situation where in years past I relocated a viburnum,
mm-hmm.
that was a prolific bloomer to just an area like that where there was a lot less mm-hmm. light. It
didn't bloom as well, did it?
No, it did not bloom as
lived.
Well. It lived, but it just didn't grow as quickly either. So you sacrifice some of those elements, but that does not always necessarily mean, as Bob's saying, that that plant won't make
it. That's where I also like to make sure I'm fertilizing properly, because that will help that plant be a little bit healthier, a little bit more vibrant.
So what would proper, what does properly mean when you say
well,
that?
Well, I might fertilize early in the spring. I like the start and grow. I know there's Osmocote out there, but something that's going to feed during the entire growing season. It's not just a liquid that's a quick shot, boom, like a quick shot, and then it's gone. Something that's going to continually feed throughout the growing season. If it's real dark and shady, I also, depending on which plant it is, sometimes might throw a little bit on it late fall. Almost winter, mm-hmm. and just let it sit there all winter long. Just put it on top of the mulch and let it soak. Sometimes that second fertilization can really help that plant, especially first thing in the spring when it wakes up.
I think the fall is the most important, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to perennials. You know, another plant or another classification of shade-loving plants that we didn't even consider
mm-hmm.
are ferns.
Yeah.
Where were you? I thought you would have brought that right up. 749-B105. I'm sorry, Bob.
It's all right.
I'm going to kick you out there on the curb.
I know.
749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard, and we're just having fun here and kidding. But anything you want to talk about in the landscape, something that you may be very successful with that you want to share, or something that's troubling you, give us a shout. 749-B105. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. And if you're just joining us, thank you and for welcoming us inside the home there via the radio. If you look outside, it's going to be a wonderful day. And this is one of those days I can't say it enough or encourage you anymore to get out to your local garden centers and nurseries, see what's going on. Although we went through one heck of a week last week, and thank you to all of you who have been in the garden centers already and been patronizing and supporting us. We want to do that in return and continue supporting you. And there's still plenty of plant material to be had.
You know, it's really fun. And some friend of mine's on Facebook, I had seen, had gone out to Todd Baton's, and they were pushing their cart around with the flowers in it. It's really great to see people supporting local businesses and going to the experts and, you know, and supporting local business, because let's face it, a lot of that money stays right in this local economy, and it really, really helps the area, not to mention you're going to get expert advice.
You know, and that's not just with us in the garden center world or the nursery business. That's all local businesses here throughout Cincinnati. And one that comes to mind real quick before we go to Bob on the line, too, is our good friends down at Bromwell's. You know, that's the oldest local business in the Cincinnati area.
Wow.
So there you have it. You know, support all local businesses. We can't say that enough. And Bob, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
We're doing well. How about yourself? What do you have in store for today?
Well, I am in the middle or starting to undertake what I think is a huge project in my backyard.
All right. We love it so far.
I have my backyard is about 100 feet long, and I have a hillside where the slope is, say, 25 feet going up. So I'm living in a subdivision.
Yep.
And my house is about 5 years old. When I moved in, I put English ivy, tried to do English ivy as ground cover on the hillside. And somehow, I don't know if the plants got eaten or they just burned up or what, but the English ivy is virtually non-existent after 5 years.
Interesting. You know, I have a couple questions. We'll go back to the your main objective. The English ivy, do you get a lot of shade, a lot of sun on this particular hillside?
So the hillside faces west,
Okay.
So it gets pretty good sun, I guess, you know, in the afternoon.
Okay.
The afternoon, late in the morning.
And typically English ivy will tolerate sun, shade, part sun, part shade. So
exactly.
The other element too, do you have deer?
Yeah.
I will tell you this, and this is why I'm bringing this up, and like I said, we'll get back to your total project. One cold winter a few years ago, the deer just decimated my English ivy. I mean, that was their feeding ground, their feeding bed, so to speak. They exploited me, took advantage of me, and that following season, along with that cold winter, I had very little English ivy left, and that might be what you've experienced.
Sounds like it.
So
what I'm thinking now is that there's a couple of little, say, landscaping beds, you know, kind of to break up the hillside a little bit,
mm-hmm.
With bushes and shrubs. I'm thinking now maybe do like a blue rug juniper kind of as a ground cover for the whole thing. I have it in other areas of my property, and it seems like it's taken pretty well.
Mm-hmm. No, I like those low-growing junipers. I like the blue rug. Another one I like, too, is called Blue Ice, if I'm not mistaken. It's very attractive. That's another nice juniper.
Another one's Blue Pacific.
Blue Pacific.
Or if you want one that mounds a little bit but still spreads, Procumbent.
Nana
is a very good one.
Mm-hmm.
Very tough, very durable. You can always, and doing the whole thing is always pretty, but don't be afraid to get a little creative and add a few different things in there and get some of the different textures. Since it sounds like it's in your backyard and you look at it, you know, add some other shrubs that maybe get a little taller in pockets here with some of the ground cover of juniper growing around. It would really be interesting and pretty.
Grasses will be also attractive in that situation as well. You know, a nice little grass that I like a lot that gets around 3 foot, not too tall, stays more upright, erect, holds its shape. Adagio
is a good one.
Carl Forrester. Do a grouping of those grasses there, Bob. Various things.
Yeah. Don't be afraid to get a little creative and even add some different colors and maybe even a few flowering shrubs. Even in the winter, it might lose its leaves. But if you throw a few other things in there, maybe like a golden spirea that gets a little pink flower on it as well with the gold and the blue of the blue rug, even that alone is going to be a pretty combination look really great.
Thoughts on doing wheat mat before putting down the juniper?
I wouldn't. I'm not, you know, only time I use weed mat is if I'm using stone. I want my mulch to break down. You know, I hope someone doesn't get upset with me saying that. What about you, Bob? I just like to stay with that whole natural flow of things.
You know, if I'm putting it around some of the shrubs, I might use a little weed mat, like if I did the spireas or if I did something like that. But on the blue rug, no, I usually don't use any weed mat because usually if it's thick enough, it does a decent job of keeping the weeds out, but what you may have to do, make sure you don't blow any grass clippings towards that, you know, blow them away, because that actually does create some weeds and sometimes in those blue rugs.
Hey, Bob, what's the grade of the hillside? Is it really steep or is it kind of gradual?
It's pretty steep. That's why it's ground cover instead of grass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other thing, if you want to really have some fun, you could also add what they call crop stones in there, so some big rocks. Things maybe not too big you can't move, but if you kind of stack two or three of those together every so often in a few places, go out and see Margie out of Bushelman Supply. That would really be interesting because even if some of those ground covers would grow over that, it kind of mounds and adds a little texture to the landscape
as well. Creeping phlox, you know, as you talk about something with a carpeting, you know, carpet look with mm-hmm. color, you know, and when Bob said that about the stone, that's a great idea. Cut into that hill a little bit and set that stone in there where it's permanent and it's secure and it has a nice look.
You know, and if you wanted to, take a few pictures, get your dimensions, and get to your local independent garden center. They would love to help you do a little design and give you some different ideas that will work on that hillside. Where do you live?
The west side, Green Township.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a bunch of different garden centers over there. You got Schwab, you got
Lowman's,
you got White Oak, Holscher Hackman, you know, a few of those, all those people can go help get you a design. And don't, you know, maybe get a little more creative than just blue rugs. Because that way, if you ever had a disease on something on the blue rug, mm-hmm. you don't want to wipe it all out. You know, you got a little variety in there.
What type of spacing do you suppose on those?
How fast do you want it to fill in?
Like I said, the other ones in my property have taken pretty well. You know, they start off in a little 2-quart
mm-hmm.
bucket. And now, that was last year, now they probably have a 3-foot, you know, at their farthest points to them.
Yeah, usually they can get a 6 foot spread. So if I would plant them 6 feet apart, and then therefore if they go 3 feet in each direction, they'll kind of somewhat start touching. If you want to fill in a little quicker, maybe go 5 feet.
Yeah, but and remember they're going to fall downhill a lot because of the gravity. So you might put them a little. I don't know. I like to have it pretty full, pretty fast. So I'm planting every 3 to 4 feet. But that's just me because I like a little bit more and I want to cover that hillside as quick as I can. So I might plant a little heavy.
Okay.
All right, Bob, if you get into this project hot and heavy, you know, shoot some before photos, some during the process of the project itself, and the after look. The after
we'd like to see it.
Very good. I'll try that.
All right. Thank you, Bob.
Have a good weekend.
Right. You know, I love doing hillsides. I love land. When people give me a chance to landscape a hillside, I have so much fun with that because I like to plant varieties. I really do. I like to do some outcropping stones. You know, even a couple small retaining walls here
well,
and there.
You know, I need to talk to your brother, Doug.
Yeah?
Are you doing the digging? Are you in there with that stonework?
No, Doug, he's great. My guys on the crew, I'm going to give them a shout out. All the guys on the crew, and right now we have a lot, they are working hard. They are doing a great job. I mean, some of the staircases that they're building, you know, they're using heavy stone every day. They're doing an incredible job.
That's what
job.
I'm saying. You're talking about you like those hillside projects.
You know, hillsides sometimes cost a little bit more when you do stuff like that. But, you know, it sounded like Bob actually sees this, like, from his house. Like, it's pretty close. And, you know, if you're looking at those.
It could be attractive.
Oh, man, they cost a little more, but they're so pretty if you do it right. And there's nothing wrong with his idea of only blue rugs. But my problem is, if there ever was a problem, you know, you're losing all the blue rugs. You're just, you know, you might have an issue.
At some point in time, I will tell you this, blue rugs can get a little ratty looking once they get older. Now, I don't know if you've ever experienced that. That in itself, sometimes that could present itself as to be a big problem. And you don't want to have too many of something that will give you that problem, and then you're faced with another project.
Absolutely.
So mix it up.
Diversity and the other thing, remember on hillsides is, if it's too steep, you know, be careful with what you're doing, not moving. You know, if you're moving heavy rocks by yourself, that can be a little treacherous. So, you know, sometimes you got to at least use a little common sense and maybe use smaller stones, build a little knee wall or something in that aspect, just kind of add some interest.
Let's take another quick break. When we come back, let's get to the what plant am I? And then we're going to talk about our plant of the week in the remaining hour here of the show. And we might even touch base on the magical presence of the Gerbera daisy bloom. We posted that one on Facebook. Those blooms are stunning, but sometimes people have issues keeping them in continuous bloom. So if we can get to that, we'll talk about that as well. But when we come back, it's What Plant Am I? Tony Works with Bob Bard in and around the house at B105-749-B105. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I am Tony Works with Bob Bard, and we're going to get right to it. We got about 50 minutes left, 45 minutes to 50 minutes left of today's program, and still a lot of ground yet to cover. And one of those items we need to get into right now, down and dirty, is what plant am I?
You know, I love this particular tree, and this one is outside our nursery. It has been there for 21 years. I planted it really when we kind of first set up the garden center. We moved to that location from our other location. And it's a multi-stem. So it's different. Sometimes it comes in a single stem. Sometimes it's a multi-stem. We've also, in the picture, if you look at it on Facebook, it's smaller. But we've actually kept it trimmed. So, and just in the last 3 or 4 years have we let it start stretching out. But we actually kept it a little bit smaller. And that is the white fringe tree.
I like it. You know, it's one of those species that you don't often hear people talk about it. You don't see it as often as maybe as we should. I know that there's one little thing that comes into play with this particular variety that this particular tree is related to the ash tree.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was one report that, as far as I know, that someone had mentioned that they had an issue or saw emerald ash borer activity.
Well, I will tell
now,
you,
I
ours, the one I have at the nursery, was planted within 15 feet of an ash, and then probably another 20 feet from that was a second ash. They're long gone. They're dead. They're the the bug got them. So the emerald ash borer actually got the ash trees, and it did not touch this tree. This thing is a vigorous grower.
Right, which is encouraging to know, but there was that little bit of speculation, a little bit of worry or just looking over our shoulder to make sure that the emerald ash borer was not going to really affect this particular species, the white fringe tree that we're talking about. And it's a beautiful tree. I just think that it should be talked about a little bit more. And as graceful as that looks as she ages, you couldn't welcome anything any prettier than that in the landscape. And William Shipley, he planted his back in 1999. And I said when he did it was about 5 foot tall. And look at that picture, just like the one
looks
you
like
have
about
there.
20. Now, yeah. What's interesting, if you go online, this is where we always talk about the internet always tells the truth. Always, right?
Everything on the internet's true.
100%.
Only so, on In and Around the House.
That's right. But if you look at some of the descriptions, there's one website that'll say this thing's 20 to 25 feet tall and 20 foot across. And if you go to another website, the next one down, when we're kind of searching it, it'll say mature height of 15 to 20 and only 10 to 15 foot wide. So I personally think this is, you can keep it trimmed like we did on ours, but this is a tree that's going to get a little bit of size. You got to give it some room.
How tall is yours? Give me an idea.
This one, the one we have now, because we've kept it trimmed, we kept it really small because it was kind of underneath those ash trees for a long time. So it's only in the last 2 or 3 years has it grown, and it's about 16 feet tall.
Yeah. I'd say around 20 foot, give or take.
I'll bet you by the time summer's over, because this thing's a vigorous grower, it's going to be 20 feet tall. I bet once the new growth really pushes, I'll get 3 or 4 feet. This thing has been a vigorous grower.
But talk about the blooms.
The hanging white flowers?
Yes.
Little tiny white petals, right, just hanging from the top.
Like 4 to 6 inches in length. Really, really a nice
really one. Pretty. And it starts out real white. And then it does seem to almost like a limelight hydrangea. It seems to almost fade just a little, which really makes it an interesting tree. But the other thing that I really love about this is the size of the leaves when it really gets mature. Mm-hmm. The elongated leaf kind of has a tropical look to it, even though it's not, because it's hard to get a tropical look in Cincinnati. But it does give you that look a little bit.
It's a very attractive tree. It's a wonderful species. And, I have to say one of the key things about this particular tree as well, the white fringe tree, which is what plant am I for this week's program. It's a great species, and it's not very fussy about particular soil conditions.
No, I mean, look at it. If you look at the picture on Facebook.
Well, if it made it at Bard's, I know it'd make it anywhere.
Exactly, because we don't take care of it. But if you look, it's surrounded by gravel.
Right.
It's surrounded by gravel all the way around, and the tree has done exceptionally well. We don't water it hardly ever. We don't fertilize the way we're supposed to, and I know we're supposed to, practice what we preach, but this is one of those times where, like, the janitor's house is a mess.
Do as I say, not as I do. Is that the way we approach this one?
The guy who builds houses is still building his house. It takes twice as long because he's busy doing everybody else's. So sometimes this thing gets neglected, but it just performs so well. The only problem with the tree is they're not easy to get a hold of. And I think that's because they're not a big, giant seller, so the growers aren't growing as many.
And, on top of that, said that, in addition, you don't find it in a very large size in a lot of nurseries.
No, when you get it, they're really small.
They're small. They're typically, not saying that you cannot find it in a larger size. You typically don't see it as readily available.
No.
This is another one, Bob, that will tolerate being around a black walnut tree.
Yes.
Yes. So,
there's
a lot of benefits here. Pollution, it's not, this particular species is not fussy.
No, it just isn't. And it can handle some bad soil conditions. But if you look on our Facebook page, the ones that were posted that we posted, it's a multi-stem, and you can see that in the first picture. But scroll down and look at William's tree. His is a single stem. You can get it in different forms. The tree's going to get ultimately the same size, but you can get some different forms out of it. I think ours has like 10 stems. I mean, it's really 3 or 4 main stems and then some other branching off the bottom.
Does yours fruit by chance?
It does. Gets a little bit of little berry on it in the season.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
But a wonderful species. This is one you might check out. Look for at your local garden centers and nurseries. I don't have any in stock. And like I said, it's just not.
We did.
See.
They're gone. Yeah. But we're trying to get more. But also, let's give a shout out to Tom on our Facebook page because he guessed the year. I mean, we planted it 21 years ago. So, and it was obviously established a few years before that. So he called it 25 to 30 years
Tom's
old.
And Tom's not a small crow. Tom's in the nursery profession.
He is.
He's up at Burns Garden Center. He knows what's going on.
Yeah, he does.
But he was absolutely right. You know, when they're about that size, you know, it's a few years that they've been growing. So
everybody got it. Anybody that guessed this time, I think they got it. So I was really impressed with our listeners.
We
got a really smart listening audience. You know that?
I think they are.
They're good. They're pretty good gardeners.
I've taught them well.
Oh, you're taking their credit.
I know.
Huh?
I'm just kidding. No.
Man, look at you today. You're fired up today. Too many cups of coffee.
I'm pretty relaxed. I'm okay. It's all good.
But yes, that is our What Plant Am I? And make sure you tune in and try to get to our Facebook page on Fridays. We try to post as early as we can, but we always plant. We always post What Plant Am I? And we love to have our listeners guess and let us know what it is. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes a little more difficult.
I was a little late posting it, so you can get on me. It's just been one of those kind of weeks. We're going to take another quick break, and we're going to turn a corner, and we're going to talk about plant of the week. So when we come back, this is one that's in full bloom right now, and you're going to find these in abundance at your local garden centers and nurseries. Tony Works with Bob Bard here at In and Around the House on B105. Give us a shout if you want to talk about some things that you're having great success with or some things you want to do from a project standpoint. 749-B105. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works alongside here with Bob Bard. And boy, we've covered a lot of ground this morning. And this is one of those days if you're just getting up and you peek outside, you better get a lot done, especially if you're off on the weekends. I'm envious. I'm jealous because I'm working Saturday and Sundays. So take advantage of today. Get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. Pick up what it is you need to still pick up, be it mulch, be it annuals, trees, perennials, shrubs, all that good stuff. You're still going to find a great selection. Are you not, Bob?
You are. Couldn't have said it any better myself.
No, I don't think you could have.
I couldn't.
Thank you for that.
But going into the break, we were talking about the plant of the week. And I like this one. This one's one of my favorite perennials. It gets a little size to it. She starts out small, but she definitely grows pretty rapidly.
Comes on like gangbusters. And you can't but admire the ones that are sitting down here at the entrance to the studio as we walk into the building. They bloom their heads off, and they'll bloom their heads off.
And they've been
summer.
There a long time.
Yes, they've been there a long time.
They're a consistent bloomer year after year. Doesn't seem to matter what kind of winter we have. I know they get some salt damage down there when, you know, that's thrown because they're close to the circle turnaround of the blacktop. They consistently bloom. I'd say the only disadvantage is you got to make sure you give them room to grow because they get some size to them.
And that they do not sit in too wet of an area during the winter months. And what is this plant that we're talking about, our plant of the week?
It is Nepeta or catmint. Not catnip, catmint.
M-I-N-T.
That's correct.
And our cat loves this stuff, too.
I think you posted a picture of blackberry hanging out in this stuff.
Well, the catmint and the herb catnip, blackberry loves this stuff. And he gets a little jacked up, you know, it's like he just came from the bar when he hangs out in this stuff.
They like it.
He loves it. He'll start getting a little goofy, rolling around, dirty.
Kind of a light purple blue flower. The variety I really like is called Walker's Low. It gets probably, with the flower, maybe about 15 to 18 inches tall. But the spread on it gets some pretty good size. It can get up to 3 feet. I've seen them even 4 feet wide.
Yeah, not only do you get a lot of blooming power from this particular plant, we're talking about Nepeta, Walker's Low, catmint. In addition to that, you get that gray-green foliage that kind of has, it has an aromatic element to it as well. So there's a lot of things that are positive about this particular plant. I like Walker's Low because it's the taller of the group, and it still kind of gives you that arching
effect to the stems
with those lavender blue flowers. And, you know, if it gets a little ratty looking, you want to keep it in check. It responds well. Just take it to the barbershop, trim it back a little bit. No, you don't take it to the barbershop. You can do that yourself.
Just do it yourself. But you don't have to be super nice to this thing. You can give it a pretty good haircut, and it'll flush out just fine. But what I love is how it's such a good pollinator. The honeybees love it. The butterflies love it. This is a good pollinator.
You know, and this is a particular plant that plays well in the landscape beds with other plants, and it's a great one. But, you know, there's a lot of newer versions that are out there of this particular plant of the week. We're talking about Nepeta, and that is also known as catmint. It's a great performer, but there's one that I like called Cat's Meow, and it's a little, it's one of my favorites of the group as we talk about this. Not quite as tall as Walker's Low, little more compact, little more rounded, holds that tight, compact shape, and that's Cat's Meow. So look for that one at your local garden centers and nurseries. Look for Walker's Low. There's also Persian Blue, which is a little bit smaller, 14 to 18 inches in height. You get a little bit more of a spread with these. But in Cat's Pajamas, I love these names. I'm not the one who coined these names, but smaller in scale. It too is like 12 to 14 inches. So in the grand scheme of things, one of these can definitely fit the bill in your landscape based on space constraints. There's no doubt about it. That's why I like the choice of opportunity here when it comes to Nepeta.
You know, and you were also talking about Nepeta. We were early in the show talking about different white flowers. There is one called Snowflake. Now, I personally have not had it, but there's one called Snowflake that's an all-white. If that's what you prefer and you don't like maybe the bluish-purple shade, you could get an all-white one, which is very interesting as well.
But this is one sure to please in the landscape, that's for sure. If you have plenty of sun, at least 6 hours or more a day, and it's not in a wet place, I can guarantee you that you will not be disappointed.
You know, some other good benefits to this one is it's deer resistant and rabbit resistant. So you're not going to have a huge issues. I think we were talking to Bob who had the big hillside facing west. You know, if he wanted to add a few of these in that area, that would do really, really well on that hillside and just give him loads of color. And not to mention, I said butterflies and the honeybees, but also the hummingbirds. Even though it doesn't have that big giant trumpet-like flower, they say that this one is really good for attracting the hummingbirds.
And you know,
as well.
It's a native plant too. So there's so many huge benefits with this particular variety, our plant of the week.
Spacing is important though. If you're going to plant these, you know, you're going to buy a 1 gallon, and it's pretty small. I mean, realistically, when you buy them, you're going to think it's kind of a small plant, but you got to space these things a couple feet apart at minimum. Because they get some size.
Yeah,
to them.
Give them a little bit of room. So this is one that it's almost like you can't go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a standout. It definitely is a standout in the landscape. And there you have it. So I love some of these plants. And when we hone in on them, you know, they do have value, or we wouldn't really talk about them.
Absolutely. And you know, especially once again going back to Bob, he'd mentioned planting on a slope. You know, these are good for a slope and a little bit of a bank. You know, not a 90-degree bank. Nothing's going to grow on that. But if you just got a slope where, you know, some things will grow, this is a pretty good one. I really like it. It can handle hot, dry conditions. There's just so many benefits to it. You just got to make sure you give it room to grow.
I'm with you.
So,
that's why it's our plan of the week. There you have it. And we're going to take another quick break. And, hey, next weekend, as Memorial Weekend, if you have some things you need to tidy up, you need to get those beds into shape, you need to get those edges done around those beds where you can delineate where the landscape bed is and the turf, the lawn, we're going to tell you how to keep that nice, sharp, and crisp. 749-B105. In and Around the House, I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works and Bob Bard. And gosh, I'm just looking outside here, the window here in the studio, and it is just drop dead gorgeous. There's not a cloud in the sky that I can see. And take advantage of today. There's a lot that you can do still to get that yard into shape before we go into next week's holiday weekend, Memorial Weekend, and we're going to talk a little bit about that as well. But before we go to that particular topic, we're going to talk with Sherry. She's having issues with cats. Good morning, Sherry. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you?
We are doing well. So you don't want catmint or catnip hanging out in your landscape because you have enough activity with cats without it, it sounds like.
Yeah, the neighborhood cats use our flower bed as a litter box.
Ooh, that's not good. No, that's really, it. Not that you mind pets, but sometimes it's like, why are you hanging out here?
Exactly. We have a little bitty 3-pound miniature Yorkie, so we know these aren't because of him.
Yeah. You know, have you tried anything thus far? I'm just curious. What have you done, if anything?
I bought the moss balls. I bought the stuff that you sprinkle on there.
Mm-hmm.
We sprayed something on there. It's like as soon as it rains, you know, then that's done. Over the winter, it was really bad.
Right. You know, I had a buddy, and Bob, I mean, chime in. I had a buddy that would use, like, crushed red peppers and put them into a blender and make some sort of a spray and use that. He was effective. You know, he would mix things up, too. Also, there's a product out there. I have never, Sherry, personally used this particular product, but it's called Cat Scram. And I have customers that come in and swear by it. Now, Cat Scram is also... they manufacture deer scram, rabbit scram, and, you know, I've had people swear by this. They want me to order it. They'll buy 3 or 4 bags every season, and they've had great success with it. Although I've not used it, that's really all that I can share with you.
I had a neighbor use some just straight cayenne pepper, sprinkled it around the areas they were going. I would make sure your Yorkie doesn't get into that area.
Don't let him around the plant.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So, you know, you could try the cayenne pepper. That actually worked. My neighbor Joe, his cat was using my, and he knew it. He's the one that brought it over, sprinkled it all over the area, and I never had an issue after that. It was just done. So that worked.
Yeah, all of a sudden, your landscape bed may become a large litter box, and that's just not a good situation. You don't want that smell. You don't want that around.
No.
Something else that you might do, and I don't want this to sound I don't want this to sound bad, but a lot of times if the problem is severe enough, pull your mulch back, pin down some chicken wire, and lay the mulch back over top of the chicken wire lightly, because cats like to cover up where they did their duty, and that chicken wire will deter them from doing that. They like to scratch and cover up. And once they discover that, that's not going to be one of their favorite places to stop.
Yeah, that came up on the internet when we Googled it.
Yeah, and I don't want that to sound terrible, but you know what? If the problem is bad enough, I think that I would take whatever measures that are necessary without doing anything else, I don't need to say more, to try and deter that activity. You know,
yeah. We have to replace everything.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, and you know, when you get out into your landscape beds and you start planting, you know, that's not healthy to be in, and you know, with your hands and you're planting things. So definitely, you know, take some of those measures, what's necessary. Are these cats that belong to neighbors, or are they just kind of feral cats?
Well, I think the next-door neighbor took in 1 or 2, and then they had a litter. And then I think the guy next door, he has like 2 or 3. But it's like, you know, they're yours. Keep them in your yard or in your house.
Mm-hmm.
They're not mine.
Yeah.
The cats.
No, that can be a problem, and it gets aggravating. But try one of those remedies, and if you have any success with any of those, you know, sounds like you're having some issues, and whatever you may find successful, please call back and share that with us.
I have a question. What kind of mulch are you using?
I don't know. We haven't redone the bed yet because we're waiting to see what we need to do for the cats.
Now, I've had some customers, I've never personally tried it, but I've had some customers switch to like the pine mulch, like the nuggets. And they've found that they've had some more success with that, or the pine needles, as opposed to some just regular mulches. So I don't know if that's true or not. That is just something customers have tried. I have never done it, so I can't speak that it works, but, I have had a couple customers say they switched mulch, and that helped.
Okay, maybe we'll try that too.
Sure.
All right, Sherry. Luck. Have a good weekend. Thank you. Let us know what works.
All right. Thank you. You too.
She should definitely not plant catmint.
That's what I said. Yeah.
Do not plant. If you have a cat issue, do not plant catnip or catmint.
Oh, yes. Be inviting even more cats to hang out.
Absolutely.
I'd be like a good, I would be like a good watering hole bar stop.
It would be, right? It would be something. That's for sure.
You know, next weekend's Memorial Weekend and getting things into shape, from a landscaping standpoint. How would we go about maybe crisping up those nice landscape edges to differentiate, to make a nice edge from the landscape bed to the turf itself? Do you have a preferred method?
Well, you know, most people, a good sharp spade is the right way to do it, you know, and you're going to take that, you know, at an angle, slight angle, going almost straight down if you can, or at a slight angle from the grass towards the mulch bed, and basically dig a little bit of a trench, so to speak. You know, some people like a super deep edge. You don't have to have a scenic view off your edge of your bed, you know, where it's so deep. You can't, you know, you're looking in the Grand Canyon, but a nice good edge with a spade to first to get it all cleaned up. And then every so often take your weed eater and just buzz it clean after you mow, and you'll be amazed how clean that stays. When I did a really good job of that, I actually skipped a year of edging because I used my spade edged, and then I took my weed eater, and about every other time I whipped it and it stayed clean.
You know, over time, you know, I kind of take that approach myself, but it seems like I keep going year after year after year a little further out into the yard. I'm inching out further, and I need to curtail that and get back.
So there's a way to fix that. So we have a lot of people, you know, we do a lot of cleanups, and that's probably one of the more common questions. How do I keep my beds from getting bigger? You know, because you want to take a good spade and you want to clean it up, but over a year the mulch washes down into that trench, and so yeah, what you do is you move 2 inches out. Well, over a 10-year period, your beds are 2 feet bigger than they were before. Take a rake, rake your mulch back into the bed so you have a clean edge, and then spade your edge, and then put the mulch back. That really helps.
Then what do you do about the area that needs grass seed?
Well, then you throw a little grass seed down.
That's what I'm
saying. But I'm saying just keep it the same size that it is on that. So you rake it back, you keep it the same size. Don't increase that edge. You know, and then we've had a lot of people where over a 2-year period, or a 10-year period, the beds are huge. We'll recut everything, rake it all back, level it, sod those areas, and recut the edge and just move it back where it was.
You know, I kind of like the look of the metal edging. What's your take on it?
I like the look. I don't like how when we have a winter like we had, it freezes and thaws, and it really wants to push that metal edging up. You got to sink it all the time. I'd rather go see Margie and get a stone and use a stone edging. It just stays better.
Got it. No, my neighbor across the street has the metal edging, and it looks really nice, and it's been in for years, and I don't see that element of issue.
Oh, man, I was at a lady's house this week, and she's like, what do I do? It just keeps popping up year after year.
Is it a good
year.
Quality?
Yes, it was the high-end stuff, the baked-in aluminum. Mm-hmm. It was really good stuff.
Interesting. So, no, I just kind of, you know, if it can keep that edge where it needs to be and stays in place.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, over the period of years that I've been in our home, I've gone out just a little further than I want. It just seems like that bed keeps extending.
It does.
I need to get it back in to check.
Now, what do you think about the plastic edging?
I think it's cheesy. Can you say cheesy?
You said it twice. Waiting for the third time. I do not like the plastic edging at all. It moves. You run over it with the mower. It does break down when the sunlight hits it. It's going to last 2 to 3 years, and it's just, that's it. So if I'm going to use an edging and you want to use it, metal would be preferred. Still, I would use stone, but I think you could do that. But, you know, this is a good weekend to get out and trim your shrubs. I've had a few people call and say, my boxwoods look like they're weeping because they're growing so well with all the moisture. Go ahead and take a good quality pair of hand shears and give those things a haircut.
Now, you like to cut back the boxwoods at this point? When you just have that little bit of floppiness with that new growth.
Usually because I'll get another little round of growth and it kind of covers up, you know. So I like to trim. I'm a butcher. At Bark Nurseries, I'm known as the butcher.
I've already done that with some of the Green Mountain boxwoods, and they fleshed out even a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But I like for that foliage to harden off a little bit.
See,
to get a better cut.
I'll go ahead and take off, like, to keep my plants, if I want to keep my plants smaller, I'll go ahead and trim a lot of the new growth off and just get back down to it. That way I can keep that plant smaller for a little longer. But that's because I'm being lazy and I'm butchering things a little bit, but grows.
Talking about new growth, I want to go back to a Facebook question that was posed to us late last week with the boxwood. It has some damage on it. And how would you handle that? We'll talk about that when we come back. I'm going to put Bob on the burner here and see what his thoughts are, like he does me, before we go into a break. 749-B105 in and around the house. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. We're going to go into it for one more segment here before we call it a day. And in doing so, I had asked Bob a question about something was posted on our Facebook page last week. And by the way, that is a great way to stay in touch with us and give us a couple of days and we will respond to you in a timely fashion. And it was Maureen who had posted a photograph of her boxwood. And you could obviously see in the photograph that some of it was discolored in various spots on the boxwood. And she wanted to know if we thought something was going on with the root system of this particular boxwood. And I just wanted to ask Bob what your two cents.
I don't think it was a root issue. To me, it looks like either ice or water or something set on it. And it looks more like some winter damage, even more than a bug damage as well, because it's isolated generally more to one spot. So unfortunately, the only thing I would recommend is go ahead and cut all the brown out, because that foliage is dead. It's not coming back. So I'm going to clean it up. It's going to leave a hole. But in a couple years, it could and should fill in.
Yeah, depending upon the type of boxwood that is. You know, if it's one that, you know, like a green velvet that can get up to 3 feet over time, you may see that favorably respond. You know, the good thing, the encouraging thing about this particular photograph, and that's why it's important when, in fact, you have the time and you are able to send us a photograph, the other good thing about it is that you see new growth on the boxwood, which is encouraging. Right. So that tells me in itself, just like you mentioned, it's not really a root problem, because you wouldn't see that kind of new growth, I would seem to think.
It does sometimes take a little time to fill it in when you cut it out. So in this particular boxwood, if you can't get to Facebook and see the picture, you know, it's probably got, I don't know, 15% of a bad spot on the plant. Mm. But it's a pretty significant, and judging from where the sidewalk looks like it is on the picture, unfortunately, it's the side you see the most of,
right,
which is usually the way it works. But at this point, I would cut it back, anything that's brown, let the new growth come out, and see what happens.
Yeah,
and you just have to see, because this thing, I think she sent it to us on May 11th, so it's probably already added some new growth on the good stuff anyways.
Yeah, and you know, typically, I mean, not... You know, that's a great question, and you can also have some issues with boxwood, you know, from a disease standpoint, which you don't typically see. And in our industry, and I'll tell you a couple of diseases you can try and find out if, in fact, it's what's going on with your boxwood. But in our industry, you know, we use this term, I think, loosely, and when we call various issues like this boxwood decline, you know, I kind of get a little, you know, I just don't think that's
sufficient. I don't think this
enough
is boxwood decline.
No, but
I think this is winter damage.
But I do too. And I don't think, you know, I have a problem with that boxwood decline, because a number of things can really happen. And, you know, there are those issues. You can have what they call Volatella blight, which I know that's not what it is. Or sometimes you can have some issues with canker.
And I don't think it's that
no,
either.
No, it's not that either. And, you know, this is one of those things you just keep kind of digressing and looking back and saying, you know, where have we been? What could have caused this? You know, it's near the sidewalk. Sometimes it might be salt damage, or it could be, you know, it could be urine damage from a pet. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to say, but I think it's some sort of a winter, you know, result of winter injury.
And a lot of times look up above, too, because sometimes maybe the gutter's clogged. Sometimes that's a tell. You know, oh my gosh, why has my boxwood done that? It hasn't done that in forever. Check the gutter above. There was a lady I met out in Bethel, and I'm pretty sure she had an area where the water was flowing over the gutter, and all winter long, it was kind of beating down some of these rains that we had, and then it would get cold. And for a boxwood specifically, if you get all that moisture and then it freezes on there for a little while, that can cause some damage. It usually doesn't kill the plant, but that's some damage. So in her case, it was all because of what was above it, not the plant itself.
Yeah, and also, you know, desiccation during the winter. Mm-hmm. This, you know, it's not always, you know, it's not uncommon to see some of that, you know, where a boxwood will dry out as a result of winds and desiccation, losing moisture. So this is why it's even more so important as we go through the course of the season, is to feed your boxwoods a couple of times throughout the year, keep the systemic drench on them, keep the leaf miner damage, you know, out of play altogether. you know, suets, you know, keep that damage out of play. Keep them evenly moist and happy, adequately mulched, yep. And you'll have happy boxwoods. Boxwoods are long-lived.
They are. They're a good plant. And we're almost out of time, so I want to touch on just a couple things, because this weekend you can really get your beds ready if you're having any parties for Memorial Day weekend, you know, or that's when a lot of people like to have their yards done. It's a great time to do your mulching. If you put down the herbicide with Dimensions, the Weed and Grass Stopper, and you did it in early March or February, it's you don't have to do it again, but with all the rain, some of it's been used up. Might not be a bad idea to go ahead and sprinkle some more down and overlap those a little bit more than maybe what it normally calls for. Think it may help a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we've had a considerable amount of rainfall, and what that does, you know, that lessens the effectiveness. You know, the way those products set up, it's a real thin barrier on the soil surface, and the more rain you get, it breaks that barrier down, so therefore we need to replenish that.
Yep, I think that would be a good one. I think if you haven't fertilized some things and you need to fertilize your roses or your azaleas or your hollies, you know, now's a good time to go ahead and get some of those products and put it down. I know it's getting warm today, but one day of warmth isn't going to hurt anything. So if you haven't done it before you mulch, go ahead and get some of those products, you know. And then remember, if you're going to trim, always trim first before you mulch. Trim everything, rake it up, clean it up, and then
clean
mulch.
It up.
Sounds
I,
basic, but you got to do it.
I agree. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next weekend, which is Memorial Weekend, and a big pool party at Bob's. We'll swim in the green algae bowl. We'll see you next Saturday.